Chapter 5.
So, you're telling me that you, by virtue of being late of all things, managed to meet a magical creature, a firebird, and it gave you a magical token and told you not to show it to anyone. And then you met Star Castle's Domovoy and a woman under a magic curse, and they also told you not to show it to anyone. And then you went and showed it to your entire family? Is that what you're telling me? Joe concludes with an expression like he hopes that this is all one big joke. Somehow, the way he says it makes it sound like a much less clever idea than it did at the time it was happening. Maybe? Barry tries, looking from one foster parent to another, somewhat miserably. He came straight back home to pack his things up to leave in the morning, and then Henry and Joe wandered in and asked him what he was doing home so early. And somehow the whole story came tumbling out of him. It seemed like a good idea at the time? Joe's expression is thoroughly pained. Henry has put his head in his hands, and his shoulders have been shaking with suppressed mirth for the last 10 minutes. Neither of these reactions is particularly complimentary. But the important thing is I can go after Iris, Barry argues.
Yes, by all means, let us add lying to your father, who, let me remind you, is the king, to your list of accomplishments for the last 24 hours, Joe says. It's not like that's officially a treasonous act.
This is when Henry loses what composure he has left and starts laughing, a deep, rolling belly laugh. Both Joe and Barry look at him.
I'm sorry, he says, wiping his eyes. It's just such a Barry story. Just like when he was a kid. You remember the stepping stone game and Miss Cabressi's flower garden? How everything kept escalating?
This is on a considerably larger scale than that, Joe exclaims.
And yet fundamentally Barry, Henry replies. Come on, Joe. He met a firebird. Princes who meet firebirds are not meant for quiet lives. So he got a little quicker start on it than most fairy tales. After the amount of ribbing he's put up with about his inability to be anywhere on time, can you blame him for being in a bit of a rush?
Joe sighs and glares at Barry, who does his best to look sheepish and repenting, while also conveying that he's not even slightly sorry about doing it and would do it again in a heartbeat. Joe recognizes that look and shakes his head.
Someone as brilliant as you are, Barry,
he sighs.
And yet sometimes I swear you don't have the common sense nature gave a rabid squirrel.
Barry smiles helplessly. He could just imagine it, too.
Well, this rabid squirrel's going to find Iris, he says. You'll write to Eddie and tell him about the Kojai?
We will, Joe says,
his attempt at sounding grumpy entirely undercut by the hand he puts on Barry's shoulder.
You be careful out there.
Oh, and you'll take care of Caitlin? It must be frustrating to her that no one knows she's, well, human, and she loves human food, which makes sense, and...
We'll take care of her, Henry promises, then smirks. You may not feel so generous after she's clawed your face off.
I apparently heal quicker with the feather, Barry says, patting his chest. Earlier, he found an old chain and ran it through a hole he drilled in the thick base of the feather with a needle, figuring that it being in his pocket was a surefire way for him to lose it. Also, I think she and Cisco got it out of their systems, yelling at me on the way back here. Both of his foster parents gave him deeply skeptical looks.
Right, Barry says and sighs.
The king says I leave tomorrow morning, but I'll probably head out early from the castle and won't have a chance to see you, so I guess this is goodbye.
Joe pulls him in for a long hug.
Thanks, Barry, he says quietly, for everything you're doing for Iris.
She's my sister, Barry reminds Joe gently, hugging him back. I couldn't do any less. Henry pulls him in for a hug as well.
Be careful out there, slugger. He says. I want you back in one piece, you hear?
Got it, Barry says with a crooked smile.
Outside the house, Cisco is sulking very pointedly at Barry, but permits him to climb on his back anyway, which is good. Barry wasn't sure he would. I'm sorry, Barry says immediately once he's on. I should have listened to you, but I needed to get permission to go after Iris. You have no idea what consequences might happen because of what you did, Sisko says resentfully. But Barry can tell his anger is already fading. You are taking a horse, though, I trust? Not planning on running the whole way? No, Caitlin gave me an earful on the subject of blood sugar and starvation, Barry says. You'll come back all right, though, right? Sisko says plaintively. You're my favorite prince. Thanks, Sisko, Barry says, touched. I'll do my best. Let me know what horse you're taking, Sisko says. I'll have a chat with him. He'll be the sweetest, most biddable horse you can imagine. Barry laughs. Second only to you, I'm sure. Oh, I'd come if I could, Sisko says earnestly. But, you know. Don't worry about it, Barry says soothingly. Domovoi don't leave their households, even I know that much. Very true. When we get back to the castle, though, you should take 3 hairs from my tail and make a bracelet out of them. Barry's eyebrows shoot up towards his hairline. He's heard that story. It's from the original Firebird legend, actually, where the prince's magic horse helps him through all sorts of trouble using the magic from the horse's tail. You can do that? Oh, no, nothing like in the stories, Sisko says hastily. Sorry, didn't mean to get your hopes up. I'm a domovoi. I'm very powerful in my domain, the household, but not so much outside of it. Nothing like the nature spirit or a trickster spirit like in those stories. My power diminishes the further away from the household it gets. Maybe you'll find someone in need of good luck in housework or something, though, and it'll be super useful. Sisko doesn't sound like he believes that will ever happen, and honestly, Barry doubts it as well. But he reaches forward and pats Sisko's neck. Thanks for the thought, he says firmly. Every little bit counts. And you never know when something might come in useful on this sort of journey. Quest. I refuse to call it a quest. I'm not going off to rescue my true love, after all. Not even that thief of yours? Sisko says mischievously. Len didn't seem in need of rescuing, Barry says in his best haughty tones, before breaking character and laughing. But I'll admit that I wouldn't object if he needed just a little bit of heroic help. I'm sure you wouldn't. Barry shakes his head, amused. So, where should I head first? He asks. You should go visit the alchemist, Sisko says. He lives in a tower northwest of here, some distance. 2 crow's days if you go straight, which should be less on horseback, but you might encounter some obstacles. I don't know how long it is by human paths, unfortunately. An alchemist, huh? Barry says. And he's not going to try to harvest my organs for an experiment or something, right? What in the world are they saying about alchemists these days? Sisko exclaims. No, certainly not. He's great, you'll like him. He's not, well, okay, he is very into his experiments, and yes, he's sometimes a little oblivious to social norms, and maybe he's a little, over-inclusive with some of his projects. I can't wait to meet this guy already, Barry says dryly. This is coming out all wrong, Sisko says despairingly. But really, Ray's great. The alchemist is named Ray? Raymond Palmer, Sisko confirms. He used to be the heir of a very old, very wealthy aristocratic family off in, Starling, I think it was? But anyway, he ran off some years back to be a hermit and do his alchemy. He's very clever. He'll probably be able to scry you a location for the Koshai's palace. Raymond Palmer, Barry repeats. Okay, worth a shot. He spends the rest of the evening ensuring that his gear gets packed up for the morning. Caitlin forgives him enough to come with him to the kitchens to give him some advice on what food is most nutritious and calorie efficient, suggesting some ingredients that could be mixed into easily packaged bars. Barry is certain that he will be obliged to use the feather's power at some points during his travels, and he needs to make sure that he won't collapse after running a few miles. It quickly becomes clear that he wouldn't have been able to run around looking for Iris anyway. He needs the horse to carry all his food, and the horse wouldn't be able to keep up. Better to keep the feather's powers hidden, at any rate. Barry really doesn't like how Eobard and Hunter keep watching him, their eyes glittering, and how they pop out of nowhere to pepper him with questions about the feather. King Harrison is, if anything, worse. He wants Barry to go and get the Firebird right away, but while Barry's around, he kept calling him in and asking to look at the feather through a microscope, or things like that. Barry still thinks he was right to use the feather to get himself a way out to find Iris, but he's starting to think he may be in bigger trouble than he had previously suspected. He's not sure what his father will do or say if Barry comes back and says he couldn't find the Firebird. He casually mentions to his father that he doesn't know for sure if he'll be able to find him, but his father brushes away his cautiously worded comments and acts as though Barry finding the Firebird is a sure thing.
"You found it once, after all," King Harrison says, smiling. "You can find it again." Barry wants to say something, at the very least correct the "it" to a "him,"
but he also doesn't want to say too much for fear the king will change his mind about Barry leaving. Still, if he can save Iris, it'll be worth it. All in all, it's almost a relief to head out in the morning. Sisko was only able to give vague directions, even with the aid of a map. As a domovoy, he's never actually been out of Central, and gets most of his gossip from birds, which acted as a sort of conduit between domovoy. Caitlin does understand how human travel works, but she's never quite figured out how to convert bird flight into road time. Still, Barry calculates that this Ray guy couldn't live that far away, 2 or 3 days travel at a moderate pace. Maybe a little more, especially if he goes off-road and just passes along the way the crow flies. He figures that if he runs into any major obstacles, he can just go around them until he finds some human-made road to pass through. For the first day, this seems like a pretty valid assumption. He cuts off the road once it's no longer leading him where he wants to go, and there's plenty of forested lands, kept pristine either by local superstitions or ecological preservation programs installed by his father. Those are fairly easy to pick his way through. He even finds a nice little cabin meant for housing woodcutters, with proprietors who are happy to lodge him and his horse for the night. It's a surprise. On the second day, the forest starts getting thicker, larger trees growing wild. As Barry begins to leave the more well-established areas, Central is technically, as the name implies, in the center of the land, but the lands to the south and the east are the most fertile, long rolling plains that were easy to grow crops or raise livestock on, while Barry seems to be heading straight up into the mountain land that lies off the main roads between Central and Starling City, most of which have thus far remained less populated, by disinterest rather than design. Still, he's living in hope that he'll find another set of woodcutters, or maybe a farmer, to house him tonight as well. This area isn't that deserted. At least his horse is a good sport. Barry's not sure what Sisko did or said to it, but the horse is all but tying its own reins to the tree whenever they stop for a rest in its efforts to be helpful. It's late afternoon on the second day when he comes to the river. The giant, swollen, all but flooding river, to be specific. It's not that Barry didn't know the river was here. To be fair, he's been crossing this river on a regular basis all his life. Just, you know, mostly on bridges. "Fuck," Barry says, climbing off his horse and staring at the water. "This is what you get when you run out of your home on a quest like your ass is on fire," he thinks to himself. "You remember to bring maps just in case, but you forget to check them for where the nearest bridge is." "The rain's heavy in the mountains this year," a female voice drawls, and Barry very nearly jumps a foot in the air, spinning around. There's a woman sitting on a rock not far away. She's about his age and blonde. She's wearing white, and a vastly amused expression. She's beautiful, sitting there with her bare feet kicking at the water. "So we've got some summer floods. Not what you expected, huh?" "No kidding," Barry says with a relieved grin. He drops his reins. The horse obediently goes to stand by a nearby tree to graze. Seriously, what did Sisko say to him? And walks over to her. "I'm kind of a city guy, personally, and I didn't exactly think this whole trip through. I'm Barry, by the way." And I'm Sarah, she says, returning his smile. You headed out from your home abruptly, then? With enough food to feed an army, I see. Oh, man, that would take way too long to explain, he replies, shaking his head. But, yeah, I sort of had a narrow window of opportunity to get out before my father changed his mind about letting me leave. Sarah pats the rock next to her invitingly, and Barry sits down. I'm really happy to see you, he tells her. I was worried I'd have to delay for a long time to try to find where there's a bridge, and I really want to be on my way. What's the rush? She asks, laughing and putting her hand on his shoulder, running her fingers down his arm. It's midsummer. Don't you know it's time to slow down and enjoy nature? Can't, I'm afraid. I'm actually trying to investigate. Well, let me start from the beginning, actually. Have you heard of all the women disappearing? Sarah's eyes narrow. The brides, you mean? Yeah, Barry says, sighing. All the brides disappearing on the eve of their weddings. This might sound strange, but I've got a lead on it that I'm trying to check out. What lead? Sarah says, scooting closer. This might sound bizarre, but I think it's a koshai, Barry tells her. Sarah nods, looking interested. Relieved that she doesn't think he's crazy, Barry babbles onwards. There's been frost and dead plants around some of the kidnapping sites, and the Domovoy back at Star Castle says he's heard rumors of a koshai walking the lands. Wow, really? Sarah says, her eyes wide and head tilting alluringly to the side. And you're after your bride, I assume? What? Oh, no, my sister. Well, I consider her a sister. I was fostered with her parents. Her name's Iris, and she was going to marry a guy named Eddie. He's great. He's also off looking for her, you know? It's not like he isn't, but, you know, it's my sister. Sarah sighs and sits back up straight. Barry hadn't noticed how close she'd come or how much she was leaning into his space until abruptly she wasn't. Yeah, she says, shaking her head. I know about sisters. My sister disappeared too. She was one of the first. Her name's Laurel, Laurel Lance, of the Lances of Starling City. Our father's the head of the knights there. Nearly a year ago, she was going to marry the Prince of Starling, name of Oliver. Do you know him? The Queen's son? Barry says. No, not really. He's older than I am. Mostly by reputation, to be honest. Realizing how that sounded, particularly since he has heard about the Starling Prince's reputation for partying and infidelity, and all those other things, he clears his throat, adding, When I say reputation, I mean... Sarah starts laughing. No, no, she says, giggling. I know exactly what you mean. Don't lie. He's more my eldest brother's age, Barry says with a grin. And they can't stand each other. I think it's a rule, only one narcissistic, overdramatic egotist per room. Sarah laughs harder. She was beautiful before, in a strangely compelling way, but she looks better now, to Barry's eyes. Less seductively beautiful, perhaps, but prettier. It's strange, and Barry can't quite describe the change, but the laughter seems to lighten up her face a lot. Oh, so you have met Oliver. I'm sure he's nicer than he comes across. Yeah, yeah, Sarah says, rolling her eyes. You're cute, you know that? Barry says, abruptly realizing that she'd been hitting on him earlier. No, don't worry, I'm not planning on seducing you anymore. Oh, thank God, Barry says, then his eyes go wide. I mean, not that you're not great, I'm sure, but I really do want to find my sister. Plus, there's this guy. Although he might possibly be a legend, it's kind of unclear. Have you ever met Felicity Smoke? Sarah asks curiously. She's an aristocrat from Starling. I think you'd get along great. I have met her, Barry says, shaking his head. And don't think I don't know what you're saying. I've heard her reputation for babbling, but she's one of the disappeared women, too. She is? Sarah says, alarmed. Who was she going to marry? Barry thinks back to his notes, going through them, and... Oh, well, that's awkward. He coughs. Oliver, Prince of Starling, as it happens? Possibly on the rebound? I don't know. She was one of the most recent disappearances, so it has been nearly a year, as you said. Somehow I'm not as surprised as I feel I should be, Sarah says dryly. And you said a Koshai took them both? Yeah, but that means they'd be in some palace of delight. Barry pauses. Presumably together in the palace of delight. Sarah cackles. That'll serve Oliver right, she says, pleased. I only wish I could help. Well, if you want to help with the search, Barry starts, but Sarah's already shaking her head. No can do, I'm afraid, she says with a sigh. I'm kind of stuck here. Barry frowns. But if your sister was going to marry Oliver and your father was head of the knights there, you must have been from Starling, or at least visited it. Oh, yeah, but that was then, Sarah says, grimacing. And seriously, Barry, you're a sweetheart, but you're also kind of an idiot. Hasn't anyone told you not to talk to strange women standing by rivers? Well, yeah, Barry says, shrugging. I heard the same stories growing up as everyone else. No talking to strange women near rivers or lakes, because you never know, it could be a Rasulka come to drown unworthy men in revenge. What's that got to do with it? Sarah's giving him a look like he's an idiot. Barry thinks about how she was just sitting there, calm and barefoot, and miles away from the last sign of civilization in a wild forest next to a flooded river. How easily he left his horse behind and came to talk with her when he was in a hurry. How she slid up close to him and... "You were going to drown me?" he exclaims, a little hurt. She'd seemed so nice. "Well, I'm not going to drown you now," the Rusulka says crossly. "You're looking for your sister, and you're not being all macho about who she's dating. That's at least 2 points in your favor." Of course I'm not going to be macho about Eddie, Barry retorts, crossing his arms in front of him and scooting away from her. Eddie's great, and Iris is a grown woman. She can pick whoever she likes to marry. Besides, he'll let her start that writing career she's always wanted, which I think is great. Is your name really Sarah? Yes, and it's Sarah Lance, too, she replies, leaning back with a sigh. Rusulka are drowned women returned to life, remember? I drowned out by the sea, near Starling. Aren't Rusulka drowned women who returned to life after being wronged by some man? Barry asks, remembering the old stories. That's why you're all, crazy homicidal against the male gender? Sarah drawls with a smirk. As it happens, I was drowned while on a trip with a man. With Oliver, actually. Barry turns and gives Sarah an incredulous look. It was a mistake, she yelps. I was pissed at Laurel. They were courting back then. It's complicated, okay? Seriously, who is this guy? Barry says, shaking his head. If I knew someone who had had 3 women disappearing after dating him, I'd start suspecting him of being a serial killer. Sarah snorts. He probably is, though not in the way you think. She says, rolling her eyes. The birds tell me after I drowned, Oliver got all broody and serious and shit, and set himself up as the judge, jury, and executioner of Starling to ensure justice was done. Isn't Starling an oligarchy? Barry says, frowning. It's ruled by its nobles, not its prince. It's not an absolute monarchy or anything. He can't just do that. He didn't really ask permission, Sarah says. Anyway, his personal reinvention came right in time to help stop that earthquake curse a while back. The dark magician who didn't get invited to the queen's daughter's birthday and cursed the city to come down on her 18th birthday? I heard. I know, it's so fairytale-esque. I'm almost jealous. You're a Rusulka, Barry feels the need to point out. You are literally living a fairy tale. Oh, shut up, Sarah says, punching his arm. It's clearly a light, friendly tap to her, but Barry clutches at his arm, fairly certain that he's going to develop a bruise. He has zero doubt which one of them would win if she decided she was going to drown him anyway. Good thing she's changed her mind about it. That's the problem, though, you see? I drowned in the sea, and that's the Vodonyu's territory, you know? Barry shakes his head. Seriously, this is going to be too much. He sighs. First a Koshai, and then the Domovoy, now a Rasolka and the Vodonyu. Seriously, this firebird feather is so much more trouble than it's worth. You have a firebird feather? Sarah says. Seriously? That's kick-ass. Thanks, Barry replies. I think that's why I can see magical creatures now. Oh, you'd be able to see me regardless. I'm meant to be seen. That's how I do my business, Sarah says cheerfully, as if she isn't talking about drowning people. But it's probably why you didn't fall under my spell right away. The firebird feathers already got you under its protection. That's good? Barry says cautiously. Very good. I wouldn't want to be under a Rasulka's spell. No offense meant. None taken. It's a bad place to be, she says. Now, come on. Make me a deal, and I'll get you and your horse across the river myself. A deal? Sarah looks at Barry expectantly. Oh, right, a deal. Magical creatures, rules. Right. Sorry, I'm pretty new to this whole believing you guys really exist business. Much less how to act when I meet you. I will trade you a trip across the river for a kiss, she says, smiling and tossing her hair. Barry narrows his eyes at her. First, I'm sort of in love with someone already. Second, aren't Rusulka kisses deadly? Only because they're usually followed by strangulation and drowning. Could you stop sounding so cheerful about that? Hey, it's my job, she says, crossing her arms. I drown in the sea, so I serve the Vodonyu now. And Ra's al Ghul's a bitter old frogman that's lived for hundreds of years reviving himself and his servants in his pits, and sending us out to kill people for him. Do you enjoy doing it? Barry asks, curiously. Sarah makes a face. Well, no, not really. But by this point, I'm in love with the Vodonyu's daughter, so I figure I might as well make the best of it. At least until the Vodonyu tries to marry her off to someone. She sighs. Probably to Oliver, as the prince of the city nearest by his domain, and wouldn't that just be ironic? That would be terrible. Still, Sarah says wistfully, if I could only leave this river where he bound me, I'd go off to try to find Laurel, and that would be worth everything. I wish I could help, Barry says. He thinks about it. Oh, would a Domovoy's power help? A Domovoy? Yeah, before I left, Sisko gave me this. Barry holds up his wrist with the braided horsehairs. One of the housemaids had helped him with it, which was good because Barry couldn't braid to save his life. He said it wouldn't be much help, since it's more powerful near households, but... Sarah gapes at him. Are you crazy? She demands. You're on a quest! You got a quest item! You're, like... What, a day in and you're already going to give it away? I just thought that it might help. Oh, for the love of... Fine, let me take a look. Barry offers her his wrist, and Sarah examines it with a little frown. Actually, she says slowly, this might actually work. A Domovoy is mostly powerful at the seat of his power, that's true. But where one Domovoy bestows a favor, others might as well. If I can get close enough to a house, and there's plenty of those not far from the river, I could use their power to escape the Vodonyo's grasp before he even realizes what's going on. But, Barry, if I take this, you won't be able to rely on it later in your quest. You realize. And you're trading it away for what? Crossing a river that you would find a bridge for anyway? Well, keep in mind that my quest here is to find my sister and the other missing girls. Barry points out. And you said that if you could escape the Vodonyu, you'd go look for your sister, who's one of the missing girls. And I'm willing to take any help I can get, so how about the deal is... I'll give you my bracelet so you can escape the Vodonyu, And, in return, you'll help me find the missing girls by whatever means you can, including helping me cross this river and going off to find them on your own. Sarah's face splits with a broad smile, human and honest and entirely unlike what she was using earlier when she was trying to reel him in. "That's a good one. I like it," she says. "Best of all, if the Vodogne or his daughter come after me and get me into a corner, I can say that I was compelled by a magical contract, and everyone knows how fundamental those are. Let's call it a deal." "Deal," Barry says, smiling. Sarah really is very nice, even if she is a murderous Rusulka. He pulls the bracelet off and hands it to her. She slips it onto her wrist and grins. "Now go get your horse and come to the water," Sarah orders, hopping into the river herself. She stands there, easy as anything, as if the flooding waters aren't violently rushing down from the mountain at a speed that would knock a horse on its side. Barry shakes his head and goes to get on his horse. He gently nudges it forward towards the water. Sarah reaches forward and grabs the reins, pulling the horse with her through the river. And everywhere they walk, the water is as quiet as a still pond, and shallow enough that Barry's feet are only barely brushing the water, even when they pass by the very center of the river. Barry waits until they get to the other side, not wanting to disturb Sarah's concentration, but once they're there, he turns to her with a grin and tells her, "That was so cool!" Sarah looks up at him and shakes her head. "It didn't even occur to you for a second that I'd double-cross you and drown you anyway, did it?" she says, then laughs. "You're something special, Barry. Good luck on your quest." With that, she dives into the river and is abruptly gone. Barry can't even see a shape under the water, just the water itself. Magic is the coolest thing ever. He just met a Rusulka. Whistling to himself, Len's jaunty little tune, which Barry has gotten thoroughly stuck in his head by this point, even if he still doesn't know the words, he urges his horse onwards. The path is easier after that. He's still picking through wild forest, but as he goes up and down the hills, he starts to see signs of human occupation again. A bit of chimney smoke here and there, a half-cut woodpile, or some markings on the trees, which is, frankly, a relief after the depths of the forest. He does end up sleeping outside that night, but it's warm and dry and pleasant. Barry's been on overland trips before. He knows it's not always going to be this pleasant, particularly since he's on horseback and alone. But he figures he'll enjoy it while it lasts. The next morning he studies his maps and heads in the direction he thinks the alchemist tower should be. Barry has to admit he's curious about meeting an alchemist. Unlike magical creatures, alchemists are purely human. They're just weird. After all, you have to be a bit weird to devote your life to studying arcane subjects, like magic and transmutation. As a rule, so-called proper scientists, like King Harrison, can't stand them, so Barry has never met one. They certainly weren't invited to the Star Exhibition at Central, though Barry has no doubt that a handful of dabblers in alchemy would be coming anyway. Real alchemists, though, are supposed to be devoted to their craft, and wouldn't take time off to go look at a scientific exhibition. Sisko assured Barry that Ray would be there anyway. Barry sees the tower over the crest of the next hill. He's pretty sure it's the right one for two main reasons. First, it looks like an alchemist's tower, made of stone and steel, a single tower rising up from the ground without a surrounding castle or house, smoke spewing from the top, and what appears to be some sort of mechanical device at the very top. It almost looks like a watchtower, except for the fact that the river is likely the closest body of water to it. Secondly, it has Palmer written in large letters at the very top of it, as if someone were uncertain if they would find it again without a proper labeling system. Barry shakes his head. He really hopes this Ray Palmer person is as friendly as Sisko claimed he was. He urges his horse forward, eager to make some progress. He finds a dirt road not far out of his way and trots along that for a while, keeping his eyes on the tower as his guide. Barry's about 20 minutes out from the steadily growing tower. It's really large. when he sees scuffed footprints on the ground and hears a low voice cursing somewhere not that far away. Barry pauses, looks longingly towards the tower. It's so close! But turns his horse towards the voice. Whoever it is sounds upset, and the footprints seem to indicate that there was some sort of fight or disturbance before they left the path. They might be in trouble and need help. The horse picks its way through the trees, and the voice gets louder. And then Barry makes his way around a large oak, and he's in a clearing. There's a trap at the other edge of the clearing, a big net with 5 points pinning it down after it fell down from the trees. The line is weighted, and the net itself glistens with the shine of steel. It's a good trap, large enough to catch a horse. It has not, however, caught a horse. It's caught the Firebird. Barry gapes at it for a long moment, totally set back on his heels in utter disbelief. What the hell is it even doing here? What are the chances that, of all the things to be caught in the first trap Barry comes across, it's the Firebird he's nominally searching for? Barry hops nimbly off his horse and ties it to the oak tree before walking into the clearing. The Firebird, and it's the same one that he encountered in the orchard, no doubt about it. Barry's not going to forget those arms anytime soon. Takes one look at Barry and goes, "What the hell are you even doing here?"
"I was just thinking that about you," Barry says, scowling at him.
"You've just very effectively messed up all my plans, you know?"
"I messed up your plans? By, what, getting trapped by this stupid fucking net?"
the Firebird asks, astonished.
"You have got to be kidding me. How did I mess up your plans? What plans do you have that involved me, anyway?"
"Technically, I'm looking for you," Barry says with a sigh. "My father ordered me to find you."
"Your father ordered... Oh, crap, kid. You told your dad about me? What are you, 12?
Barry crosses his arms. "I needed to get out of the city for something important, and he wouldn't let me go because he wanted me to stay for the stupid exhibition. But when I told him about you and showed him the feather, he let me go on a quest to find you. The plan was to go do the other thing and then come back and say I couldn't find you, except now I've found you." The Firebird glares at him through the netting.
"Okay, eh?" He holds up a finger. "It is not my fault that you make bad life choices. And B," he holds up a second finger, "have you ever considered, oh, I don't know, lying?"
Barry makes a face. "I'm a terrible liar," he says glumly, "especially where my father is concerned."
"Uh-huh," the Firebird says, voice dripping with skepticism. "Really?"
"Yes, really! You know King Harrison of the Deep Wells?"
"Guy in charge of Central, yeah."
"He's my father." The Firebird blinks, looking almost owlish as his anger fades away for a moment.
"Wow, that is bad luck," he says, then scowls again. "Wait, are you telling me you showed a Firebird feather to the scientist king of Central? What the fuck is wrong with you?"
"It got me out of the city."
"It's gonna get me dissected, you fucking idiot!"
"I'm not going to let you get dissected, don't be absurd," Barry says, though now that the Firebird mentions it, it does seem like a thing his father would do. Also Eobard and possibly Hunter as well. And all those scientists that had come by for the exhibition... "Listen, do you want help getting out of the net or not?"
"Not in exchange for delivering myself to your father, I don't. I'll do without the help of some dim-witted little..."
"Is it a magical ability of yours to go deaf every time I talk?" Barry snaps, starting to lose his temper. He normally prides himself on being pretty calm, but the Firebird's constant stream of insults is not helping. "I just said I'm not going to turn you over to my father." The Firebird goes quiet.
"What? Really?" he says skeptically.
Barry, who had honestly thought he would if he could, but couldn't see himself handing any person, magical creature or not, over to the sort of experiments his father was cackling over before he left, groans and sits down. "Well, not if he's going to try to dissect you," he mutters. Maybe I can just let you go and say that you got away?
You should definitely do that, the Firebird says encouragingly. Go on now, let me out of here.
Barry glares. That wasn't a deal offer, and even if it was, I revoke the offer.
You've gotten better at this, the Firebird observes.
Yeah, well, your feather apparently comes with the ability to bump into magical creatures every 5 minutes, Barry tells him.
The Firebird smirks.
You knew this would happen, Barry exclaims. You jackass!
It's been known to happen, the Firebird allows. Now, will you make a deal to let me out of here or not? I want to get out of this net before the alchemist finds out I'm here.
Barry frowns. Will that be bad?
Very bad, the Firebird says darkly. I don't particularly want to be in his clutches either.
Well, there goes the plan of just tell the alchemist the Firebird is here and hope he keeps him around for a while. Barry sighs. He can't in good conscience let the Firebird get captured and tormented for scientific reasons. Okay, he says, shaking his head. Let's make a deal, I guess. You need to be let out of this trap, and I'll be happy to do it, but in return, The Firebird crosses his arms and gives him a look. Give me a minute, I'm thinking.
I'm at the mercy of a blithering idiot, the Firebird moans. Someone who can't even keep his mouth shut about a Firebird feather, despite explicitly being told not to mention it around.
Yeah, you and the Domovoy, Barry says, rolling his eyes. I've gotten this lecture already a few times now.
Wait, you got told by me and a Domovoy not to do a thing, and then you did it anyway? What sort of moron are you?
I said I already got the lecture, okay? Barry says, glaring at the Firebird. I don't need it from you, especially since you still need my help right now, got it? The Firebird rolls his eyes, which now appear to be brown, not gold.
I will bet money that you're single.
I'll have you know that I have a perfectly nice... Well, perfect, anyway. I have a great guy back home that I would probably be dating right now if...
Ha! Probably! You know, almost only counts in horseshoes, right?
Barry scowls at him.
What was so important that you needed to get out of Central for anyway? The Firebird asks.
I'm hunting down the Koshai who's been stealing brides right before their wedding, Barry says. He took my sister in all but blood, and I couldn't just stick around at a stupid party while she might be in trouble. How about that for a deal? I'll let you go if you help me out with that. It worked with Rusulka, after all, and it seemed fair enough. Plus, it'll keep the Firebird with him, so that he can at least pretend to his father that he tried to get him back to Central. Maybe they could stage some sort of escape attempt near the walls, if his father looks to be a bit too scientific-minded about studying the Firebird?
Fuck no, the Firebird says. Not a chance in hell.
What? Barry exclaims. Why not? I'll let you go after we finish the quest. You won't get turned over to anyone.
Don't care.
You know, I'm pretty sure this isn't how getting magical favors for rescuing magical creatures works.
I don't care. I'm not going anywhere near the Koshai's palace until I'm properly equipped to do it,
the Firebird says haughtily. Barry frowns. What do you mean?
I've got to complete some quests of my own before I can approach the Koshai's palace, the Firebird says grimly. You can't take one of them on just like that, you know? These places are like roach traps. You go in, you don't come out.
You're planning on taking on the Koshai? Barry asks, fascinated. The stories never mentioned that magical creatures also sometimes went on quests, and certainly not alone. As a companion, maybe. You're planning on breaking into the Koshai's palace? The Firebird scowls.
There's something there that I want, he says stiffly.
Something or someone?
Well, it's certainly none of your business, the Firebird says,
which Barry interprets to mean that he was right, and it's definitely someone who's been taken. A lady Firebird, perhaps? Maybe a beautiful maiden? That doesn't seem to jibe with the stolen girls all being unmarried brides, but who knows, maybe the Firebird had been planning on getting married. Or maybe it was a more platonic affection, like Barry's for Iris? Okay, Barry says. In that case, I'll let you go.
In exchange for what? The Firebird says suspiciously.
You keep going with your quests to face the Koshai, and I'll go on mine, Barry says. I want the girls who have been kidnapped and held in the Koshai's palace to be rescued. I don't care who does it.
That isn't a favor. I was gonna do that anyway.
Listen, do you want me to let you out of this net or not?
Fine, the Firebird says, sulking. I'll keep going on my quests in exchange for you letting me out.
Barry rolls his
eyes. Which may be the stupidest deal I've ever made.
The Firebird has got to be the least magical of all the things he's encountered, for all that it has the reputation of being the most magical of magical creatures. Barry examines the net. It's large and tough, but there has to be a way to undo it. He's been studying it for the last few minutes, and he thinks he sees it. There are 5 points on the net. If they are all released at once, the entire trap should unravel, releasing the Firebird. Of course, if they're not released at once, the net will only get more tangled. Though, to be specific, they don't actually have to be released at once. They just have to be released close enough in time to be virtually the same as being at once. Barry grins and focuses on the feather hanging on his chest. The world slows down, and he darts forward, unhooking each portion of the net as he goes by it, the previously unhooked portions frozen where he leaves them, moving so slowly through the air it's as if they're standing still. He comes to a halt in front of the Firebird just as the entire net collapses. The Firebird unravels itself and stands to his full height, which is about the same as Barry's, actually.
You got super speed?
He says, sounding interested.
Now there's a useful one.
Huh, so you really don't know what people get? Barry asks, pulling out one of the energy bars Caitlin had instructed the kitchen to make for him, and which he'd shoved in his pocket earlier. He's hungry already.
No, I don't. It depends on the human, really.
So me getting super speed is literally the universe's way of joking about how late I am to everything. Barry says, shaking his head. Somehow I'm unsurprised. That does seem to be my life. The Firebird shrugs.
Could be about how quick you are,
he offers, looking at Barry contemplatively. Barry's surprised he hasn't made a break for it yet. I don't suppose you could tell me where the Koshai's palace is? Barry asks, figuring he might as well see if he can get something from the Firebird before he leaves. If you still want to repay me for the help, that'd be good enough for me.
No,
the Firebird says.
I think I've got a better idea. You want to save the girlies, right? That's why you're looking for the palace?
Yeah, Barry says cautiously. What about it?
Well, what use is finding the palace if you can't get yourself in or them out?
The Firebird says, suddenly smiling toothily. It's slightly intimidating.
How about this? You come with me on my quests and help me out. 3 of them. And in return, I'll give you a hand breaking into the palace. How's that?
I can't delay by going on a bunch of quests.
With your speed, they won't take all that long, the Firebird says. And you don't know shit on how to stop or even distract a Koshai. I, however, do.
Barry bites his lip, thinking about it. He really doesn't have enough information. The old stories never seemed to have the Koshai get defeated through normal means. Usually it was a magic gift, which Barry doesn't have. Or some lucky reason the Koshai had to go away, leaving an opening for the brave hero to steal his lover back. And Sisko, however helpful, didn't know of any way to defeat a Koshai either. He could only share stories of their fearsome power. Have you been there? He asks. Are the girls safe?
Yeah, I've cased the place a couple of times, the Firebird says. They're fine. A bit pissy. One of them tried to scale the walls to try to get out while I was there, and of course the wards wouldn't let her. But it was a decent attempt.
Barry snickers. That sounds like something Iris would do. You swear you're telling the truth?
I swear, the girls are fine. Other than them being stuck in the palace. Now can we get on with it?
The Firebird says impatiently. Okay, Barry says, nodding. I agree to work with you on your quests, and then you'll help me break into the Koshai's palace. But, the Firebird scowls, only after I get confirmation that they're okay.
Fine, the Firebird says, and holds out a hand. Deal.
Barry shakes it. He's surprised by how warm it is, how pleasant, though perhaps he shouldn't be when he's dealing with a man bedecked with feathers that flicker like flame. The wings aren't in full evidence now. He seems more manlike, his skin patterned with feathers up and down his shoulders, back, and chest, like some beautiful design that's been seared into his flesh. Every once in a while, his shoulders ripple, and actual feathers seem to rise up out of his skin for a moment, the design becoming real. He's still barefoot, still shirtless, but the beautiful cape of glowing feathers is hidden away somehow. My name's Barry, Barry offers, releasing the Firebird's hand.
Good for you, the Firebird says.
It did not occur to Barry until this moment that he might have signed up to go questing with the world's most annoying misanthrope. What's your name? He asks patiently. I can't just keep thinking of you as the Firebird. It gets too unwieldy, even in my head. The Firebird grunts, then shakes his head.
Mick, he finally says.
Barry blinks.
I'm sorry?
My name,
the Firebird says, scowling at him.
Mick, it's my name.
The mysterious and mystical Firebird is named Mick?
Trust me, it's better than what it's short for.
The Firebird, Mick, apparently, says grimly. Barry thinks about that and shrugs. He can sympathize with that. Can't fault you for that. My full name's Bartholomew, and only my oldest brother calls me that. And he only does it to piss me off.
Everyone I know has a terrible name, Mick says. You should have heard my old partner's. His was awful.
Barry's about to ask about it, pleased that they seem to have found a shared subject to discuss without rancor. But a second after he speaks, a pained expression flickers across Mick's face. Barry's seen that expression on his father's face when he mentions their mother, or on Joe's these days when he speaks of Iris. Someone Mick loved, who's gone, then. And near enough that it's still a sensitive subject.
So, what's our plan regarding the Koshai? Barry asks instead, and pretends not to see the relief on Mick's face.
Well, you want confirmation that the girls are safe before we go questing, right?
Mick says. Barry nods.
We should probably go ask Palmer for that.
Palmer? Barry asks, frowning. Ray Palmer, the alchemist? I thought you were afraid of him.
I'm not afraid of him, Mick says, shooting Barry a quick glare. I just prefer to be free and clear when I meet him, so that I can exit when he starts... Well, you'll see, he does this thing.
A thing? Mick nods, unhelpfully not adding anything else. Right, Barry says, shaking his head. The great and mystical Firebird, ladies and gentlemen. Whatever illusions of grandeur Barry might have had have been thoroughly popped. Luckily, his favorite fairy tale more than exceeded his legend. Barry can't help a smile at the thought of Len. Maybe Mick will agree to help him find Len after they're done, or at least give him some tips.
Oi, Speedy!
Mick calls, already standing by Barry's horse.
You coming or not?
Yes, yes, I'm coming!
Barry jogs over and climbs on his horse. Mick looks at the horse with a dissatisfied eye. I can go slowly if you like, Barry offers.
Nah, I'll ride with you, Mick says. The tower's close enough.
Barry's eyebrows shoot up at the thought of the big man climbing onto and then promptly squashing his poor horse.
I don't think that's such a good idea.
Mick hops up on the horse behind Barry without any apparent difficulties.
Or maybe it'll be no problem at all, Barry concludes, blinking. I didn't realize this horse could take that much weight.
I'm half bird, Mick says, rolling his eyes. I can be more bird, or less, whenever I want. And right now, I want me some hollow bone structure.
That is so cool, Barry says. Tell me, how does it work?
I have no idea.
You must have some idea. How does it feel, like when your bones shift weight and mass?
Heavy.
Ugh, why are you this frustrating?
Practice?
Barry grumbles the rest of the way to the tower. There are gates, though they're open. Barry rides right through, figuring that an alchemist who owns such a tower would surely have defenses or some sort of security measures. It's not until after they arrive at the door that Mick starts sniggering. What? Barry asks.
Breaking and entering. Not bad,
Mick says with amusement. Wait, the gates were open!
Which is why it's only not bad rather than good.
Barry rolls his eyes. I'm clearly going to have to keep an eye on my wallet around you. Mick looks disturbingly flattered. Barry ties his horse to the door, and they head inside the open doorway to the tower. Mick walks ahead, as if he knows the layout of the place. Barry wonders if Mick's tried to rob it. For a magical creature, he seems to have quite a criminal bent. A dizzying number of turns, and frankly unnecessary doors, even Mick is rolling his eyes. Later, they end up in a large circular room with a tall man bent over a microscope, muttering something to himself. He looks like he's as tall as Barry, and broader, but not nearly as broad as Mick. Barry's pleased, if somewhat disappointed, to see that he's wearing the same sort of pants and shirt and vest that you could find on any minor noble or moderately well-off merchant. He'd kind of been hoping for grand magical-looking robes. He glances at Mick's still slightly feathered shoulders and wonders if he's becoming jaded. Barry's also wondering how you introduce yourself to a clearly preoccupied alchemist when Mick walks into the room and announces,
"You've got too many fucking doors!"
Barry sighs. Traveling with the Firebird is not going to be anything remotely fairy-tale-like, he can already tell. God, what a pest! Palmer looks up and blinks owlishly at the two of them, then beams. Oh, Mick! It's so good to see you! How've you been? You're not injured again, are you? No, I can see you aren't. Can I get you something to eat? Or maybe something to drink? Oh, and you've brought a friend! How great! He leaps out of his chair, rushes over, grabs Barry's hand, and pumps it a few times. So nice to meet you. I'm Ray Palmer. Please, call me Ray. Any friend of Mick's is a friend of mine. Let me grab you some coffee. Oh, and I think I have some biscuits left over from earlier. He smiles distractedly at the two of them and then makes a beeline to one of the many cabinets lining the room. Barry turns very pointedly and stares at Mick, who doesn't even have the decency to look ashamed. That's the guy you didn't want to be in the clutches of?
Yes, Mick hisses back vehemently. He's doing the thing.
What thing? Being nice?
Yes.
You're kidding me, Barry says, but Mick looks honestly disturbed. At that point, Ray returns with a plate with some various types of pastries and a pot of coffee, which Barry certainly isn't going to complain about. Sorry if I'm a bit hyper, Ray says apologetically. It's just that I had this absolutely wonderful idea last night on what to do with the new alloy I found, and...
You couldn't put it down, and you've been mainlining coffee again, Mick concludes. You're getting predictable, haircut.
Barry's already got a cheese and berry pastry halfway to his mouth, but he does glance surreptitiously up at Ray at Mick's comment. Huh, Ray does have a weird haircut. It's very... stylized. Barry self-consciously runs his fingers through his own hair. And I just get really into things, you know that, Ray is saying dismissively, still smiling broadly. Now introduce me to your friend. Mick crosses his arms.
We're not friends.
Don't worry, Ray stage whispers to Barry. That's what he says about me, too. Barry eyes Mick, who looks like he's contemplating homicide, thinks about Mick's behavior up until this point, and decides he likes Ray. Ray seems like a perfectly nice, if somewhat exuberant, guy. And also, Mick is a jerk. Barry, accordingly, grins back and says, Oh yeah, that's our Mick, all right. Always covering up his real feelings. Mick gapes at him.
Covering up?
Oh? Ray says, interestedly. You think so? Oh, absolutely, Barry says, with every ounce of sincerity he can muster. You know how he is. He can't admit he cares about anyone, no matter how close they really are. He has issues related to his childhood, you know? Mick is sputtering in fury, and Ray looks delighted. You know, I always thought so, he confides in Barry. He's so closed off sometimes, you know? Oh, I get you entirely, Barry says, clapping Ray on the shoulder amiably. Take it from someone who knows. You just need to be persistent. Love and kindness, that's the ticket. The more the better. He just needs someone to show him he's loved, no matter how much he likes to complain about it. Mick is actually sparking flames off his bare shoulders at this point, opening and closing his mouth, mute with rage. Barry's smile broadens. Take that, asshole. That's so good to hear, Ray replies. Have you been friends long? Oh, I've known him a while now. Say, do you have any more of these pastries? Barry asks, since he's finished three already. They're delicious. Oh, sure, plenty, Ray says, beaming. I'll go grab some from the kitchen. Ray dashes out of the room, and Mick turns to Barry, hands spread in disbelief or possibly contemplated strangulation. One of his eyes is twitching. Want some coffee? Barry says sweetly.
You're a dick! What the hell was that? I thought I made it clear that I hate the touchy-feely shit.
Well, you've been so incredibly nice to me so far, Barry replies with a shrug and a smirk. I can't imagine why I wouldn't be as helpful as possible.
So what? You're just going to try to piss me off at every turn because I was a little rude?
A little rude? Barry hisses, straightening in his chair abruptly in offense. You've been an unredeemable jackass at every turn. Now, unless you want me to tell Ray here about how your mother didn't hug you enough as a kid, and he really should start taking up the slack, I'd promise to be nicer in the future if I were you. You make me believe it, and I'll think about forgetting to mention it. Mick snarls at him.
You've got to be kidding me!
I have two older brothers who I thoroughly dislike, Barry says dryly. You don't really want to get into a contest with me as to who can be the more annoying, because trust me, I will win. A strange expression goes over Mick's face, and he shakes his head, starting to calm down.
My old partner would have loved you.
Barry's eyebrows shoot up. What, he actually liked hugs? Mick looks deeply taken aback for a second, then bursts out laughing until he's nearly curled up on himself.
No, he gasps. Not really.
Barry can't help but smile at Mick's amusement, which is so heartfelt as to be automatically contagious. Then what? Mick sits up, wiping his eyes.
He would have appreciated you threatening me with sheer awkwardness. Very outside the box, yet very effective. Well played, Slick. Well played. Fuck, I haven't laughed that hard in ages.
Barry grins. So, truce?
You got yourself a deal, Slick. Also, if you ever try to hug me, I will burn you alive.
So noted, Barry says, suppressing a smile. He's starting to get the feeling that Mick was all talk in his violent, cynical misanthropy. Maybe Ray doesn't have the wrong idea after all. Ray returns with a tray with a giant heaping pile of pastries, which Barry approves of entirely. Ray is clearly good people, even if he is a little oblivious of social cues. Here you go, Ray announces, setting the tray down. I'm sorry, I'm not sure I caught your name. Barry, Barry supplies, holding out his hand to shake again, which Ray obliges. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance. Mick tells me you're an alchemist.
That's right,
Ray says enthusiastically. I started out as a scientist, really, but I'm interested in the sort of transmutational effects that can only be developed after a thorough study of the alchemical properties of matter. Oh? Barry asks, mildly curious and eager to discuss virtually any subject other than his entirely fictional, long-standing friendship with Mick. Luckily, he knows how to deal with scientists. Tell me, what project are you currently focusing on? It's like magic. Ray talks for a good 5 minutes straight about a particular brand of alchemy that he's interested in, something to do with changing a person's size or matter reinterpretation or something like that. After the first minute, Mick's shoulders start to droop in evident boredom. After the fourth minute, he finally snatches a pastry from where Barry is putting a sizable dent in the pile, and sullenly starts gnawing on it. Barry congratulates himself on effectively discovering whether firebirds eat people food. "Ah, but I'm probably boring you," Ray concludes, a good few minutes too late. "Anyway, you didn't come here to talk about my research. How can I help you guys out?"
"Slick here wants to look at the palace," Mick says, jerking his thumb at Barry. "Then he's gonna help me out on my quests."
Ray blinks and turns a somewhat insultingly incredulous stare at Barry. "What?" Barry asks, shifting slightly in his chair. People usually look at him like that when he's made a bad decision. "You must be very good friends with Mick," Ray says, sounding impressed.
"I mean, I offered to go with him on principle. He said no, but not only did he agree to take you, he actually agreed."
Barry hesitates and glances at Mick, who is studying the blank stone ceiling intently and avoiding Barry's gaze.
Crap.
"What exactly did I just sign myself up for?" he asks, starting to get a little alarmed. "Mick said he'd help me break into the Koshai's palace if I could help him get the things he needed to defeat the Koshai."
"And I'll do it, too," Mick says. "None of that was a lie."
"Yes," Ray says gently. "But did you tell Barry what your quests were?" Mick looks very near to squirming. He crosses his arms over his chest defensively.
"Didn't see why it was relevant."
"Mick," Barry says warningly, eyes starting to narrow, and feeling unaccountably hurt that Mick tricked him into something instead of just asking him up front. Mick actually flinches, which surprises Barry. Apparently, contrary to all appearances, he knows what guilt is.
"The quests aren't the most straightforward, is all," he says, staring at the ground now. "We've got to get a set of goggles from the Workshop of the Sun, a coat from the Walrus Collective down in its underwater caverns, and, the Ice Queen's scepter, that's all."
"That's all?" Barry cries out, jumping to his feet. "Are you insane?"
"That's what I said," Ray said.
"I can't figure out why he needs them, either."
"There's only one way to stop a Koshai for good," Mick says. "I need these three items to do it, okay? Otherwise, they'll just keep going. They're called the Deathless for a reason."
He turns and glares at Barry.
"Even if you do succeed in rescuing all your girls, and that sister of yours, you can't tell me a goody-two-shoes like you will be okay with him just keeping on with it as long as it's not your country's women involved."
Barry deflates at that. Of course he wouldn't be okay with other people suffering like that. He scowls at Mick, who, damn him, has a good point. "How plausible are these quests?" Barry asks Mick, slumping back down into his seat. "Do you actually think we can do it?" Mick grins somewhat wolfishly.
"Well, now that I have you with me, it's much more likely to work."
"But the Workshop of the Sun?" Barry says skeptically. "Is that even a real place?"
"Sure it is," Mick says. "That's why I'm going on this quest myself, instead of waiting for some poor human schmuck to get recruited by fate to do it. I know where all the places are, and I know how to get them. It's getting the items that's going to be the problem. I hate pulling heists on my own."
"Wait, heists?"